Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hello, everybody. Nice to have you back with us here on Close Up Talk Radio. We're going to talk to somebody who's really fascinating today and who's involved in a fascinating line of work. If you are a fan of mystery shows, detective shows, you know, police shows, like the FBI series on CBS, you're going to love this because we're going to be talking about forensic investigations of digital evidence. And as you know, on some of those shows, it is often the critical link that helps the FBI or the law enforcement division, whichever it is, solve a crime. And it's kind of amazing because when a case contains digital evidence, it requires testimony. And when I say case, I'm talking about a court case, contains digital evidence. It requires testimony to clarify what kind of evidence was found and how it was found. You see, that Bull, that's another show on TV that uses this kind of information a lot. Anyway, our guest is a digital forensic investigator. And they, that is investigators like him, collect and analyze digital evidence, including everything from text messages, pictures, email, and web history, to document metadata. Our guest is Patrick Seward, who is the founder of Pro Digital Forensic Consulting, headquartered in Richmond, Virginia. It's a one-stop shop for electronic evidence collection, analysis, and expert witness testimony in support of litigation and investigations at the governmental, corporate, and private levels. It's all in the pursuit of truth and justice, he says, that is, he being Patrick. He says, we find the truth for a living. It's really interesting. It's an amazing website. I'll give you the information on that if this is something you're interested in. Maybe you are in law enforcement and you need help cracking a case. This is the kind of person you could come to for help. And it's interesting, Patrick's career began in law enforcement back around the early, 2000 at the patrol level in Richmond, Virginia. He later transitioned to serving as a school resource officer in both middle schools and high schools to kind of bridge the gap between law enforcement and the community. And it was in that role that he was introduced to the Southern Virginia Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, where he learned how to conduct online undercover investigations. The term for that group is called the ICAC. And they're responsible for tracking down online sexual predators of children and purveyors of child sexual abuse material on the Internet. He says it creates a protective layer between children on the Internet and predators who would seek to exploit them sexually. Well, he got so fascinated by what he was doing there that he left law enforcement in 2014 to launch his company, Pro Digital Forensic Consulting. And this company combines the best practices in forensic methodology with the most modern investigative techniques that are available today. Pro Digital Forensic Consulting offers what is described as a 360-degree litigation support approach with highly trained forensic examiners to conduct the analysis, report findings, and testify as expert witnesses as needed. That's a real capsule picture of what Patrick does and what his company does. And I find it fascinating that he's joining us today, so we're going to talk to him about all of this and how important it is today to help solving crimes, and not only that, but helping convince jurors that a case is actually correct and predators should be convicted. So let's bring him on. Patrick Seward in Richmond, Virginia. Welcome, Patrick. Nice to have you with us today. How are you?
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate you having me.
Hey, listen, it's a pleasure to have you here. I find what you do sounds fascinating. Is it as fascinating as it sounds?
It can be. It has an element of cool factor to it. You know, when we're when we're presented with a piece of digital evidence, there's some cool parts to it, and there's some not so cool parts to it, some kind of mundane parts to it, pretty much like any job. But the aspect where we go in and extract data and then analyze data, and then particularly when we report and testify about that data, is really where the rubber meets the road. So, you know, just like with everything, there's some mundane things that go into it, but generally speaking, I would say it's a very high-tech, fast-moving industry that I'm proud to be a part of.
I assume you do this primarily for law enforcement, but are there other companies or fields where, you know, your techniques and your abilities are warranted? How about that?
I started in law enforcement. The number of law enforcement and governmental clients that I have right now are somewhat limited, just because there's a lot of people in law enforcement that do this, you know, primarily for them. Mainly,
right.
what my clients are involved in litigation or investigations otherwise, whether it be a corporate investigation, like some sort of corporate malfeasance, employee misconduct or something like that. I'll also get involved in a fair amount of divorce cases where there's, either an accusation of infidelity or something like that. I tell everyone all the time that affairs are conducted on mobile devices, so that's where the evidence is going to be. And then things like intellectual property theft or other types of cases where there's going to be data involved. Now, what I tell all the attorneys that I work with and talk to on a daily basis is there's going to be data involved in any one of your cases in 2022. There's no doubt about it. Now, whether or not it's effective, you know, in the long run to hire an expert to go through that data and report to you back about it is another question. But there's data everywhere, so wherever that data is, we're here to assist with those litigation investigative cases.
Which means you've got to be super sharp and aware of all the technical aspects of things like cell phones and laptops, computers, and that kind of thing. How do you stay on top of that? Because, you know, these devices are constantly changing. How about that aspect of your work?
Well, it's a challenge, particularly when you're trying to work cases and put on training classes and things like that. But, you know, it's really incumbent upon the individual examiner in my role to basically know what the different hardware that is coming out and the changes in the hardware and then the changes in the software. You know, mobile devices are the best example with regard to this because I swear there's a new iteration of the operating system on your phone almost weekly, depending on what type of phone you use. So those things always are constantly being updated, so we have to update our knowledge with regard to that. And that can be done in any number of different ways, whether it be white papers or research-driven to webinars. You know, fortunately, I really am just fed that information from people that are a lot smarter than me, whom I trust. You know, most of the time, I'm not the one going out and finding out those changes myself, but sometimes I am. So it just requires staying up with this. You know, I have this little anecdote that I left this investigative field in law enforcement for about a year, and I came back to it to launch my business, and I was amazed by how much that passed me by. So keeping up with the technology, the changes, the different iterations of whatever the case may be, whether it be a PC, Mac, mobile device, whatever the case is, keeping up with those changes is absolutely crucial.
You know, it just occurred to me, as a colleague, there have been cases in the past where police have recovered a cell phone and they've been unable to crack the password. And they've actually, I mean, it's been Apple. They've gone back to Apple to try and have Apple open the phone. And Apple, in most cases, has gone along and done it. Sometimes, you know, they're a little sticky about doing that. But how about that aspect of something? When a phone comes to you, if the password is, you know, you don't know the password, do you have the secret knowledge of how to open that phone?
I wish I did, particularly with iPhones.
Okay.
The kind of approach that we have to take nowadays. Now, I will say, several years ago, we used to be able to bypass a lot of passcodes and things like that. But as you can imagine, Apple and the manufacturers of Android devices have have really put a large emphasis on security and privacy. So any more, our ability to bypass those things effectively has to be outsourced. So I have several resources that I will reach out to. Now, law enforcement has some tools that are specific to them to where they can do it, but those tools are on lockdown. They are specifically marketed to and employed by law enforcement. So I don't, and as a private sector examiner, I don't necessarily have access to them. I may have access to the data they get from them through the discovery process and, you know, going through litigation, but I don't necessarily have access to that part of it. Now, I can outsource that stuff to a third party potentially to get that information, but, you know, there's a few factors that go into it, not the least of which is cost, and those things can cost a lot of money, and so some clients just aren't interested in paying that amount to get their data.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You have affiliations with, you know, like the Department of Homeland Security, the Secret Service, things. So you work for, you know, law enforcement, you know, agencies quite frequently, don't you?
I work along with them, you know, again, trying to get to the heart of the matter. I'm also an adjunct instructor at one of our local police academies here in Virginia and have been for a long time. Unfortunately, that doesn't, because I don't carry a badge or a gun or and my paycheck
right.
doesn't come directly from them, it doesn't allow me access to that stuff. I wish it did, but maybe that'll change one day.
Okay. Let's talk about an example of the kind of situations or cases you get involved with and that actually end up going to court. You've testified in court, right?
Many, many times.
Wrong. Many times. It's interesting. I talk to a lot of experts in different fields. You know, they may be doctors or whatever, but going into court and testifying before an attorney who's trying to grill them and throw them off is a whole different ballgame. Were you prepared for that the first couple of times when you went into court to testify?
You know, I was fortunate in that working my way up from a patrol-level police officer all the way through an investigator and then into the private sector as an expert, as a retained expert, my feet into the frying pan, you know, so to speak, was somewhat mitigated. Like, I would my initial testimony experience dealt with traffic tickets and things like that, and that's very low level. But when you get into very highly technical things and testify as an expert, of course, it's kind of a different ball game. Was I prepared for it? I would say yes, in a manner of speaking. I had when I was an investigator on the ICAC task force, I had a couple of prosecutors who were very, very good, not only with the technical side of what we did, but in helping me to become a better expert and a better witness. And really what I do in almost every given case that I testify in is I go into it knowing the facts of the case as best I can. I go into it, obviously, with the approach of telling the truth, because if you don't tell the truth, that's not going to be good for anybody, including me. At a conversational level with whomever is questioning me, it's a little bit easier under direct examination than it is under cross-examination, but I really just try to have a conversation on the stand in front of the judge or jury. And if you really approach it that way, it can kind of reduce the stress and even the formality of a little bit.
Interesting. You know, you mentioned, you referred to it. Let me ask you about your experience with the Southern Virginia Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. What was that about, and what did you do?
I initially started off kind of working case. I was a resource officer, a school resource officer at the time, and when we signed on as a member of the task force, and I initially started off working cases part-time, you know, after school, you know, just for a little bit of extra income and to see what would happen. And so they trained me up in the proper way to do it, but I ended up making one case initially, and then the second case I ever made was extremely high profile. We arrested the head soccer coach at Howard University in a case that began and ended in one night. And so from there, it was really kind of warp speed ahead as far as doing the undercover stuff online. And really what I would do is set up profiles to act as a 13-year-old girl, and people would approach me and say all sorts of horrible, nasty, sexually explicit things and propose to do those things to me, thinking that I was a 13-year-old girl. And the way that the law is written, that is a serious offense, particularly in Virginia. It bears a minimum mandatory 5-year sentence upon conviction. That's per count. So it obviously was a very big deal, and so we made many, many cases together, me and the prosecutors and the rest of the task force, to where, you know, there was some case precedent that was sent as far as sentences that juries gave. It seemed like we had a lot of cases that went to a jury trial, which is odd in those types of instances. A lot of people just don't want to approach that stuff with a jury, but for whatever reason in my jurisdiction they did. And so we ended up taking a lot of cases to trial, and the jury ended up throwing the book at most of them, if not all of them. So it was a very eye-opening experience, and of course a kind of a career-making experience.
You make it sound like this goes on quite a bit. Those of us who are not in law enforcement aren't really aware about it, don't hear about it, but it is goes on a lot.
It does. Back when I was doing it, we were mostly on a desktop computer. Now, these days,
right?
The old saying was, with my prosecutors, was, you know, that the investigators, being me, would fish where the fish are. Well, now the fish are on a mobile device. So the paradigm has changed a little bit with regard to that, but it certainly still goes on much more than people think or realize. The Internet is a doorway into your home, and most people would not leave the door to their home unlocked. So without putting a lock or some sort of security measure in place with regard to that, you're leaving your children wide open. So the job of the task force was to try to put a police, a law enforcement presence in between the predators online and the kids that were online.
By the way, how did you find your experience as a school resource officer? I mean, you were a patrolman before. But how about working in the schools? Was that enjoyable? Was that challenging?
It was challenging in that it was a different speed, first of all. Certainly
right.
Different than working patrol work. I was kind of a hard charger on patrol. I won the DUI award several times, and I wrote a lot of tickets and made a lot of arrests and warrant service and things like that. And so you go from that to being essentially a liaison inside the schools to interact with children. You know, it gets you a little bit out of your comfort zone. But I tell you, it was a very good experience in how things function outside of regular patrol police work, but still working as a law enforcement officer. Taught me a lot about communication skills. Taught me a lot about how to deal with people, both inside the school system, the parents of the children themselves. It was a very eye-opening and very educational experience, and one of those things that I'm happy I did.
Good for you. Good for you. But prior to that, were you with the Virginia State Police?
No, I started off with the Virginia Commonwealth University Police Department in Richmond, Virginia. And most university police departments are pretty small and not really that active. This is not that. It was the opposite of that because it's in the middle of VCU's in the middle of downtown Richmond. So there's a lot of the same problems you would have in the inner city you would have at that university police department. So there was a little bit of a crash course there as well.
Well, good for you. Look back on it. What made you decide you wanted to go into law enforcement? Do you remember in the very beginning?
I remember being asked by some departments that I interviewed that same question. And 21-year-old Patrick would say, well, it was to uphold the Constitution, which is kind of a silly answer now, 45-year-old Patrick looking back on it. But ultimately, it was to try to help people as best I could, to try to make some sort of positive impact on people's lives. It wasn't until many years into the career that I was actually able to do that. I mean, there were some cases in working the task force where we actually were able to lock up some guys that were doing some really horrible, real things to real children. And so that impact, just because I was working patrol and writing tickets in the initial years of that part of my career, that impact, came about through the evolution of it. So it was very nice to see that kind of through to fruition, that kind of career goal.
Well, good for you. Good for you. It's a great profession to be in. Well, let's get back to what you're doing right now with your company. And tell me, what does it mean when you say you take a 360-degree litigation support approach? Define that. What does that mean?
Yeah, there's other digital forensic service providers that will offer to get your data and report your data, and that's really all you get from them. There's not a lot of consultation that goes on. There's not, you know, there's a little bit of work that happens, and then there's a big bill that you get at the end of it, and sometimes they'll come testify. What I do and what I try to do with every case that we get is take it in, get all of the available information being, let's say I'm working a criminal case, whether it be for the prosecution or the defense. I want to see all the police reports, all the search warrant affidavits, all that relevant information that goes into the data, that is the basis for getting the data. And then, of course, we do our data analysis, and then I always approach things from a very realistic perspective. I had a client call me earlier today, and she was asking about doing an analysis on a computer, and I said, well, you know, there's not a lot that I can promise you that we're going to find based upon what you're telling me, you know. So I'm very pragmatic in my approach that we take to working the cases. I want to be very realistic. I don't want to set up people for any kind of disappointment or false expectations. So that, along with the consultation piece, I like to work with the attorneys with whom I work in a partnership as a teamwork environment, where we're working together to try to find the truth and then present that in the light most favorable to whomever we're working for. So that's what I mean by a 360-degree approach. It's not just get the data, report the data, you know, move on. It's more of a partnership I have in every case that we work with whomever we're working with.
It really does sound amazing. We're talking with Patrick Seward. He's the founder and the head of Pro Digital Forensic Consulting, headquartered in Richmond, Virginia. That's a great website, by the way. It's interesting. I mentioned this to Patrick before we started. It's prodigital4n6.com. Again, Pro Digital, and then the figure 4, the letter N, and then the figure 6.com. And I said, Patrick, I don't understand that. What's the 4N6? And he said, read it fast. Forensic. That's it. prodigitalforensic.com. It's a very good, very creative website, and very informative indeed. Talk to me a little bit about the various kinds of devices that are brought into you for you to try and, you know, dig what you can information-wise out of those devices. I mean, obviously it's cell phones, it's what, laptops, you do mobile device forensics, computer forensics, cellular record analysis. There's a lot that you do. Talk a little bit about
that. Yeah, so I would say probably at this point 75% of the cases that we work are mobile devices, and meaning cell phones, tablets, sometimes some standalone GPS devices, and they run the gamut everywhere from your Apple or Android devices to, I had a case in the last 8 months where it was two what we call clamshell or feature phones, you know, your ones that you buy, you know, at the gas station for $19.99 and you buy the minutes to put on. I've had those in the office in the not too distant past. So that's probably about 75% of the cases that we work, and then the other percentages would be computers, of course, both PCs and Macs. You know, a lot of people think a computer is a computer, but Macs do require some additional expertise and knowledge and even tools to be able to analyze and report about effectively. So kind of specialize in the Mac thing. I'm a big Mac fan, even though all my forensic tools for the most part work on Windows. And then the cellular records analysis is a huge burgeoning part of what we do. Essentially, to boil it all down, your cellular provider keeps records of your activity, including location activity, as well as all the other activity that goes on with your cellular device. And so
explain what you mean by location activity. Did they keep records of where your cell phone has been as you've gone around? Is that right?
In a roundabout sort of way. So there's a couple of different types of data. The first is what we call just regular cellular call detail location records, which is a generalized location of where your phone is during the time of a call or text or data transmission. And so that is related to a GPS coordinates where a cell site or a cell tower is, and then a direction off of that cell tower. So we can estimate a location of a device based upon those records, and we can map those out and even testify about their veracity, if you will, or testify about what the records are showing us and then how we go about mapping it and illustrating it. There are also more specific location records that are not available for as long a period of time from the carrier, but they intend to estimate the actual GPS latitude and longitude of the device itself. Now, that's an estimation, and it's based upon proprietary methods that the cellular carrier uses. But, again, it can be very, very useful if you think about it, particularly in the criminal context, but also in civil cases, it's growing in popularity where putting someone at a location or near a location at a particular time or series of time events can be super useful evidence. And so it can help to confirm or refute claims in any number of cases. And so it's great evidence. It's evidence that most people don't have access to themselves. So it's kind of what I call pure evidence. In other words, you can't call up your carrier and say, I want to get my cellular location records. They simply won't give it to you without a court order or a search warrant or something like that. There are some small exceptions to that. But we are able to take those records and then map them out and construct demonstratives and testify about about what they show us and hopefully either put bad guys away or keep good guys out of jail or prove that someone was or was not where they were claimed to have been. So it's great evidence.
That's pretty fascinating. Most people have no idea all the kind of information that can be dug out of a cell phone and cell phone records, do they? They think you can erase something from your phone, but you can't in many instances, right? But it still stays there.
And there's a lot that's going on in the phone that people have no access to, have no, knowledge about what's going on the phone that's only available through a forensic data extraction. So there's a lot that's going on. If you think about that device is always on, even with the newer iterations of the iPhone, even if you try to turn it off, it's not off. So it's always on. I hate to use the word tracking, but it does always have some sort of location data associated with it. It's not necessarily tracking you, but some of that data can be extracted and analyzed and used as evidence in our cases. So, and of course, their capacity is growing exponentially with every iteration of the new devices that come out. Now you can buy an iPhone that's 1 terabyte. That's a heck of a lot of data. Most people can't.
That's a lot of data. That's right.
It is a ton of data. So, and of course, it takes a long time to go through it too.
Oh my gosh. Well, I must tell you, it really sounds very, very interesting in what you're doing. And not only that, you, as we pointed out, you work for law enforcement agencies, you work for private investigators. It's quite a wide array of customers that you have utilizing your services. So congratulations. You've got a rare company there. Good for you. How big is your team, by the way?
We've got a team of I'm the primary. I'm the founder and principal consultant. We've got a team of several analysts right now, three or four on staff that are helping us out. One of my goals has been to try to build a staff that is experienced in investigation, not just digital forensics, but in investigation, because you have to be kind of an investigator aside from the digital component of it to be effective. So people with law enforcement backgrounds, people with expert witness designations, all that, anybody who's got those bona fides behind them, I'll have a conversation with them and vet them and see if we can sign them up to be part of our team.
Well, good for you. Well, listen, this has been amazing. Our guest has been Patrick Seward. Again, he's the founder and the head of Pro Digital Forensic Consulting. They're in Richmond, Virginia. And again, that website is cool website. It's prodigital4n6.com. 4n6. That means forensic. Patrick, very creative. Good for you. Thanks for taking the time to tell us what you do. It's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate
it. Good luck. Okay? You are welcome. All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that. It's amazing what they do. Absolutely amazing. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next time. Okay? Have a great day, everybody. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.